we'll talk about the Israeli government now, since we talked a whole lot about Israel just a second ago. So now let's get into the segment that I actually have for Israel, shall we? It's twofold. One of them being Israel closing Al Jazeera's offices in Israel. Al Jazeera being a major news outlet. And then there's Israel. And then Israel's also refused an invitation for a peace summit in Egypt. Alright, so these are the two things that I have here. So, yeah, we'll start with them close. We'll start with Benjamin Netanyahu specifically, because this is an order from the top. He even given the order to close Al Jazeera's offices in Israel. This was basically effective immediately, and they've closed the offices, they've confiscated the equipment, so they weren't even allowed to keep the equipment. No, they confiscated that too. It's like, what's there to say? Right. Because I could go, oh my god, Al Jazeera is just this incredible news agency. And look, I have depended on them for, you know, video footage of what's been happening on the ground in a lot of these stories that I've covered in regarding the Middle East, because they have a really good ground game. I'll give them that much. They have a really good ground game. So I have depended on them for, you know, context regarding visuals, because it's one thing to read something on the screen, it's another thing to see it, right, and get that kind of context. So credit where credit is due, I do use them, and I think a lot of people who cover the news, particularly Middle Eastern news, use them. But I'm not gonna dwell too much on Al Jazeera in specific. Instead, I'm gonna, you know, take that step back and look at the more generalized, you know, look at the base code for what we're witnessing here, right? We have yet another supposedly freedom-loving democracy in Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, the only place where you have freedoms, and you have the rights, and you don't have those in those other countries in the Middle East, you know, all that trash that the Israel simps love to just dish out and dole out as though those were valid points for how Israel committing ethnic cleansing and genocide are excusable because they're a democracy. It's like, what a sucker. What a sucker. Like the longer this goes on, I know I'm toxic, all right? I know I'm toxic, but, like, and I'm also aware that a lot of my criticism has been more geared towards the Israel simps than the Palestine simps as of late. But my goodness, can you imagine how much of a sucker you'd have to be to really believe that? To really sit there and go, this country X is a democracy, so everything that they do wrong, I'm just not going to talk about. When they do something horrifying, I'm not going to say anything about it. In fact, I'm going to defend it, right? And to defend a foreign nation, like, it'd be one thing to sit there and just lie for America, because at the very least, you can say that you had a vested interest in maintaining that lie. What exactly do these people gain from lying for a foreign state? I went off on a tangent on this already, but I don't get it. I don't get, what do you gain from that? It's not about what I gain. Well, okay, well, what could be your reasoning for thinking that this is a reasonable proposition? Why would you do this? And they have democracy, so it's okay. And look, for as much as I've enjoyed a lot of the Piers Morgan little debate segments that he's had on, and to be fair to him, he's had on a lot of pro-Palestine voices to, you know, really get the word out and to have that clash of ideas between the pro-Palestine and pro-Israel sides, a debate that we're really not allowed to have if the Columbia protests are anything to say or go by, if the way that our Congress votes is anything to go by, we're not allowed to have these debates, right? So him providing that platform and this forum for that to happen with his massive audience, props to him, even though he's overtly biased on Israel's side, but the fact that he's having these conversations and allowing people to speak on these conversations, even when he gets grilled himself by them, you know, he gets a little bit of, burned a little by the fire he's playing with. But for as much as credit as I'll give, and I will give that credit, right? Because I'm still going to be watching Piers Morgan, even as I say this. But he has this obsession with a sovereign democratic country, because I remember I was watching one thing that he did with John Mearsheimer, and he just couldn't wrap his mind around the idea that, no, the United States is not going to fling nukes to protect Ukraine. It's like, oh, well, what kind of message to send that Russia can invade a sovereign democratic country and just get away with it? Yes! Yeah, you being a democracy does not obligate the United States to defend you. It's not that complicated, but he couldn't get it. So that was sort of a microcosm of the unquestionable biases that a lot of people have held for a long time regarding democracies, because we view a country being a democracy as synonymous with that country being good and pure, when in reality democracy by itself is neither good nor evil. It is a tool. It is a system of governance. What matters is what you do. And a lot of people don't see it that way. They see, oh, this country's a democracy and that country's an autocracy. So the good guys and the bad guys, and look, we're way past the point of even talking about good guys, bad guys with Israel, Palestine, like to the point where I don't even include it in my tangents because it's just so blatantly obvious. Even though I think that the Palestinians have a better case to make that they're the good guys, but we're just so far beyond that that it's not even worth talking about. But people really do view, oh, this country's a democracy, so it's good. But look at, well, I would say look at Ukraine. But they don't have democracy. And here we are with Israel, and one of this major talking points, oh, they're a democracy. You wouldn't protect a democracy. Oh, they're the only democracy. Oh, they're America's greatest ally. They're a democracy. But that has no meaning. That has no meaning. I mean, we're allies with communist Vietnam. We're allies with the authoritarian dictators of the Arab prince. We're allied with people that we don't like all the time. People who don't have our governments. So the idea that you being a democracy, it means something, it really doesn't. But to go through this whole Israel-Gaza situation, and to have people, you know, go along with this idea, which, and thankfully it's being challenged now. A lot of previously unquestionable assumptions about the world are being challenged right now. So it's just another, you know, benefit of living in the times that we live in. But the idea that democracy equals good is being greatly challenged right now, right? Because what Israel's doing is not good by any definition. And all these people can do is, ironically, do exactly what they accuse Hamas of doing, which is to hide behind human shield of Hamas. Oh my, Hamas is a terrorist organization. Hamas is a terrorist organization. Therefore, it's okay that Israel killed all those civilians when they bombed a refugee camp. It's okay that Israel killed all those civilians when they bombed a hospital. It's okay that Israel killed all those civilians when they bombed schools. Hello, when they bombed schools. It's okay that Israel has killed, that 70% of the people Israel has killed were women and children, literally not even touching the demographic that you're going to find Hamas in. It's okay, because Israel's a democracy, and democracies can't do anything wrong. And this is a preconceived notion of the world, our assumptions of the world, that is now being questioned and challenged in a way that, in the most extreme way, mind you, but this challenging of this idea, of this assumption of the world, is long overdue. And in the end, I think it'll be healthy for us, but it's an assumption that's being challenged, and that's an observation that I've had. But looking at Israel banning Al Jazeera, with all that in perspective, here we have yet another case, another example of a freedom-loving democracy, right, who gets billions in U.S. taxes, showing its true colors, right? And first it was Ukraine. I brought them up briefly a minute ago. And what was the sticking point for Ukraine? Oh, that Russia invaded a free, sovereign, democratic country, and you know, and look at Ukraine now. They banned democracy. There's no elections until the war is over. So they banned democracy. They banned freedom. They banned the opposition media. All right, so they're not. If you don't toe the government's line, you're not allowed to operate in the country, right? They banned religious freedom, especially Orthodox Christianity. Right, they've been shutting down. They've been shutting down churches all across the country. So they banned your freedom. Of the press, they banned your freedom of religion. So they banned your freedom. And they banned the democracy. There's no democracy and there's no freedom. So that this free democratic country, where's the freedom? Where's the democracy? And now Israel has begun going down the same path. They've now banned the opposition media. Because that's what Al Jazeera is. Al Jazeera is obviously more sympathetic towards the Palestinians than they are the Israelis, if we're keeping it a buck 50 here. So you've banned the opposition media. That's what's happened here. Israel has just crossed that line, right? It's not me saying, oh, that's a red line and now America needs to do something about it. No, this is Israel. This is Israel's world. These are milestones for Israel that I'm just talking about here. They've crossed a line, and now new thresholds have been opened up for them. It's not a good line to cross, because the thresholds you're looking at now aren't things that you can easily come back from if you're talking about being a free society, being a free sovereign democracy. You know, the lines that Israel has begun to cross now are not lines that are going to be easily, you know, walked back across. Right. Well, once you cross these lines, once you break these precedents, once you break these norms and set these precedents, I should say, it's hard to put that back in the box, right? You've banned opposition media during wartime. Well, what's to stop you from doing it the next time you're at war, or the next time? And what's to stop you from doing it when you're at peace? And just say, oh, they're always at war with the Palestinians. So let's say that we get a frozen conflict here. They're technically still at war with Palestine all the time. What would stop them from banning opposition media the next time? What would stop them from banning... What would stop political parties from banning media that's sympathetic towards their political opposition inside the country? Like, these are not thresholds that a free society should be crossing. Like, but here Israel is. Here they are. They're banning opposition media. Al Jazeera. They get billions of dollars from us. On the merits that they're a free and sovereign democratic country. Our greatest ally. Banning its opposition media. All the while, they wage a war on the Muslims, Christians, and Jews of Gaza. Right? And I've recently discovered that you're not allowed to spread Christianity in Israel. That's outlawed. So, yet again, and this goes back to that interview that Tucker Carlson did with not a rabbi, but a major church leader, a major priest in Gaza, a Christian priest in Gaza. And it's like, and Tucker made the observation that our foreign policy always seems to screw over the Christians. And here we are again. He's right. So not only are we back in countries that are the exact opposite of what we make them out to be, and Israel is only in the midst of that transformation right now, and we won't even get into the fact that Netanyahu's in part doing all this to avoid being put in handcuffs via the democratic process. Avoid starting a war to avoid democracy. So that you don't have accountability, so that you don't get put in jail when you get voted out of power, when the Supreme Court moves against you. Like, ignoring that, which we really shouldn't for the context of what I'm talking about here, but even ignoring that, Israel is going down the path of shifting away from being a free, sovereign, democratic country, or shifting away from the veneer of being a free, sovereign, democratic country, and showing their true colors. And not only that, but not only are they not free, not democratic, not only are they screwing over freedoms and Christianity specifically, Although in the case of Gaza, the Muslims make a bigger chunk of the population than Christians do. But at every step of the way, you notice that this is Nazi-like, right? Now, what do I mean by that? Oh, that's a bit of a stretch. It's a bit of a stretch. Well, let me sort of paint that picture. Right, let me convey what I'm thinking here before. So the Nazis believed in their own superiority. They believed they were the master race. The Israelis believed they're the chosen people of God. Right? Now that by itself isn't necessarily Nazi-like, right? Because a lot of people believe them. A lot of people have their national myths founded in, you know, being special. In the context of viewing oneself as being a superior race of people, to the point where crimes against the other races are not necessarily looked down upon, now that is Nazi-like. That is a racial superior, that is a view of the world that impinges upon a perception of racial superiority that you have over other races. That is Nazi-like. Greater German Reich, I mean, the Greater Israel, Greater Israel, they want living room, living space for their people. Where's that living space? Oh, it's in all the places inhabited by these subhumans. I mean, the Palestinians. I mean, they view the Palestinians as cattle, as animals. The human animals are what they refer to the Palestinians as. So they don't view the Palestinians as actual people. They view them as animals, a herd to be culled, right? That's Nazi-like, right? They bomb and occupy these people. They try to exterminate and eradicate them in an industrialized manner. Now, the specifics of how they've gone about this do differ from how the Germans did it. The Germans had their final solution, right? You know, they did a handful of sieges, you know. Right? So it's not that the Israelis are taking the Palestinians, putting them in camps and, you know, gassing them all to death. But Gaza is an open-air prison. An open-air concentration camp. And if you try to leave, you get shot. If you try to leave the West Bank, you get shot. If you try to go through a checkpoint without their permission, you get shot. They have forced all of Palestine into state-enforced ghettos, just like the Nazis did to the Jews. And and I think I brought this up in the last episode. I'm running through these same talking points because I'm starting to notice that my government has a love affair with Nazis, right? I brought up in the last episode how they deprive and rob the Palestinians of their land and their homes and their businesses through these resettlement programs. In some of the time, in some cases, you get Israelis inhabiting houses that were untouched and unchanged from what they were before. It's just that the Palestinian family who was living there before got kicked out. Right? And it's like, these are things that the Nazis did to the Jews. Play for play, this is what the Nazis did to the Jews, just set in a different context, with necessarily different actions, a different specific set of actions, but the consequences and the intended results are the same. More and more, I start to realize that my government has a love affair with Nazis. Literal Nazis in Ukraine, who believe all the same things that the Nazis did, and a modern Nazism in the form of, in the greatest irony, Israel, in the form of modern day Israel. With, you replace the Jews with the Arabs, because it's not just the Palestinians they have this massive disdain for. You, and You replace the Jews with the Palestinians, and you replace the Bolsheviks with the Arabs as a whole, and there you go. Because the Germans had it really bad for Jews and Bolsheviks, and they want the wholesale extermination of these peoples. That's where Israel is now, with Palestinians and Arabs. Where they don't mind, they were openly talking about turning southern Lebanon into a parking lot. Openly, and at the beginning of this war, they were discussing the option of nuking Gaza. And were it not for Iran, you know, putting its foot down with that retaliation for the bombing of their embassy, we'd probably still be hearing talk of Israel trying to instigate a war with Iran. Notice all that talk about, you know, all that tough talk about how we need to strike Iran, we need to do this, that, and the third to Iran, and Notice how all that stopped, and all the people who were talking about that shit shut the fuck up the second Iran put its foot down and fired fucking 300 and something rockets into Israeli airspace. Notice how all that talk just dried up like that. Very interesting how things go. Very interesting how all of a sudden interests just magically change. But before we had an interest in bombing Iran, and now we don't, and nobody needs to talk about it anymore. It's almost as if it was some bullshit from the start. But this is where Israel is. Going down the path of their former abusers. Becoming the thing that they sought to destroy. Becoming the thing that sought to destroy them, I should say. And now they're doing, in this massive cycle of hatred and abuse and pain, they're doing to the Palestinians what the Nazis did to them. And delegitimizing the existence of their own state in the process, because what is the primary legitimization for the existence of a state of Israel? The Holocaust, 6 million Jews died at the hands of the Germans. That is the foundational, what's the word I'm looking for? The foundational wrongdoing, the foundational injustice that is used to warrant the existence of a state of Israel, of a Jewish state of Israel specifically. And yet, here they are committing their own genocide against the Palestinians, the people that they forced off the land before with the Nakba in the founding of Israel, which was itself a massive ethnic cleansing. Here they are committing the same crime that was committed against them towards a new group of people. So you lose your special status as permanent victims when you, not only when you become an abuser yourself, but when you inflict the same abuse onto others that you yourself suffered as a people. And that's what's happened here. That's the path that Israel's going down. And they could turn around. I always say it. They have the ability to turn this around. They have the ability to end this. And they should, while they still have the chance, they should, while they can still do so on their own terms or something close to their own terms, before the terms are imposed on them by people who don't really give a damn about what you think you deserve, about what you think your interests are. But Israel doesn't want that. Israel doesn't want peace. They want to continue the war. They want to continue the mass slaughter of civilians. And at this point, we're beyond even talking about Israel trying to get their hostages out. Notice that that's not even a talking point anymore. That the Israelis are trying to get their hostages. No one even says that. The Israelis are trying to get their hostages. Remember, that's what they were doing before. That's why we couldn't have peace. We needed to get the hostages. And that's why they had to invade Gaza and bomb these buildings and do a ground assault into Gaza so that we could go in and retrieve the captured. Go and get those prisoners. Get them out. Get the hostages out. No one even talks about the hostages anymore. Which is just another sort of mind-blowing observation. when you observe the narratives of the war as told by the people who are just so vehemently invested in this, no one on the Israeli side is even talking about the hostages as a legitimate means of justifying the continuation of this war. And not only that, but we got more hostages out of Hamas in those 4 days, see that 4 to 6 day ceasefire, it was extended by 2 days back in November, that 4 day ceasefire, they got more hostages back from that one ceasefire than they have in 7 months of bombing the dog shit out of Gaza. So when are we going to get the hostages back? Oh, when Hamas surrenders? Oh, okay, so never. So, oh, when we destroy Hamas? Oh, okay, so never. Oh, when Hamas lets them go? Oh, okay, so never. Never, because Hamas isn't going to let them go until you make peace. That's the reason that they're keeping these hostages, as leverage to force the Israelis into a permanent ceasefire. A real peace deal. Not just a ceasefire for 6 weeks and then you're going to go back to bombing us. Not a ceasefire for 1 year and then you're going to go back to bombing us whenever you want, when the next crisis arrives. No. Palestine, the Hamas, recognizing them for what they are. They are a terrorist organization, right? I'm not going to sit here and say they're anything else. But they're playing for fucking keeps. And if there's one thing that we can say about Hamas, it's that they actually do want a Palestinian state and that they're not going to be out there going out of their way to kill their own people. They're playing for keeps, right? They are playing one game, I can't necessarily say masterful, but a very well-executed game of hardball with the Israelis on the issue of a Palestinian state. You want these hostages back? Peace deal. Real peace deal, not ceasefire, armistice. An armistice with a signed treaty that recognizes our sovereignty. That's what they want. And they're not going to let go of the hostages until they get it. Is that filthy and dirty to hold people hostage for these political ends? Of course it is. But will it be effective? Well, it's certainly going to be effective in making Israel seem as unreasonable as possible when the Israelis say no at every turn, because they keep saying no to these peace proposals, right? Because that's the other story here. Israel's refused not just the peace proposal, but the invitation for a peace summit, which was going to be held in Egypt and sort of brokered and mediated by the Egyptian and Qatari delegates. So there was a summit that was held in Egypt. Hamas, they sent a delegation. Qatar and Egypt were there to mediate. But Israel wasn't there. Israel wasn't there. The Israelis were absent from the discussions, but Hamas, they sent their delegations, and from what we can tell, Hamas's delegation talked it out with the Egyptians and the Qataris. Now, and again, I'll just, as a side note here, just take note that the Qataris are there. They are the diplomatic capital of the Middle East, and I will stand by that because, that's what it is. They love making diplomatic plays. They love making diplomatic plays, and they're pretty good at it, right? They're pretty damn good at it. They have a very heavy presence on the diplomatic scene. I would not be surprised if they are able to have a very nice future in the multipolar world as a mediating power, not necessarily for wars anymore, but perhaps for deals and arrangements, like trade or organization, inter-organizational cooperations, and things like that. I wouldn't be surprised if they can carve a nice chunk out for themselves in the multipolar world. But I just find it very interesting that here they are again in these talks that were supposed to be between Israel and Hamas. But alas, Hamas and their delegates and the Egyptian and Qatari officials, they worked out a peace proposal, right? And so Hamas this morning accepted the peace proposal, right? So now that leaves the ball firmly in Israel's court, right as they appear to be readying an invasion of Rafah, which is the southernmost city in Gaza. It's right on the Egyptian border. If they invade Rafah, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people just scrambling, either scrambling for the borders of Egypt and creating a border crisis for Egypt, which would incentivize the Egyptians to enter the war against Israel, right? Because I can guarantee you that if they've resisted accepting a single Palestinian refugee up till this point, they will hate Israel for causing a border crisis on them with this Rafah invasion. So that's something to keep in mind. But right as... So Hamas is accepting a peace deal brokered by Qatar and Egypt. So, let's look at the significance of that as well. Qatar is Hamas's biggest backer, you know, with the Israelis being the second biggest, because they propped up Hamas for 15 years. But so Qatar is the diplomatic capital of the Middle East, and they're Hamas's biggest backer. And Egypt is Israel's only friend in the Middle East. So two countries who together balance out the others to form a neutral block together for the purposes of talks. And quite frankly, who else in the region could have mediated this? I mean, Sudan's out, they're in the civil war. Ethiopia's out, they're recovering from their own civil war that happened not too long ago. What, Oman? Bahrain? Who else could have done it? Certainly not Syria, Iran, Arabia, or anybody else. No one else could have done this. Maybe Arabia could have, but this is the next best thing you're going to have. It without, say, the Russians, the Chinese, or maybe even America stepping in to mediate this. Because the Turks definitely aren't going to be a mediator of anything Israel-Palestine. They're not mediating shit. So you have Egypt and Qatar coming together for these talks. Hamas has accepted the deal. They accepted it this morning. So now, and by doing this, they put the ball in Israel's court right as Israel's about to invade Rafah. Right? They're telling people to evacuate from Rafah. We're about to go in. So, but as good as this could have been, right? And for as important as this summit might have been, it's greatly watered down, right? And diluted and greatly devalued because the Israelis aren't there. It's the same problem that the Ukrainians and NATO had when they would sit there and have these peace summits where they don't invite the Russians. It's the exact same problem. How are you going to have a peace deal when you're not talking to the other side, the other belligerent nation in the conflict? And not only that, but the nation that has the upper hand in the fighting. Right? So just as it wasn't smart, although granted, the ones that were done with Ukraine and Russia didn't even bother to invite Russia to the summits, so those were objectively stupid. But in this case, Israel actually was invited and they chose not to go. So there is a difference here. But the effect is still the same. You can't have a peace deal without getting the two combatant entities to sign off on that deal. You can't unilaterally enforce a peace deal unless you're in the war and you win. That's the only way you can unilaterally enforce a peace deal. And so that's that. But that Israel didn't show up. And so this devalued the negotiations. And now we're looking at a continuation of the war and yet another peace proposal that has been turned down, which again makes Israel look unreasonable. Every time they do this, they look more and more unreasonable. And it's things like this that, you know, bring me back to what I said at the beginning of the war, which is that, well, not the beginning of the war, but the beginning of this crisis in Palestine, in October the 7th, this specific crisis. But I don't know what the Israelis are up to, that they can they can send all these TV rabbis to make themselves implode on live television for an audience to see on Piers Morgan and debating with Candace Owens about, you know, how Israel is justified to do what they're doing. But they, where's their diplomacy? Like, if you're not going to actually talk with your neighbors, you could at least send somebody out to make it look like you're doing something to cover your own ass. Like, they're just not doing anything. They've lost the PR war. They're not even trying. They're not trying to do any kind of diplomacy. They're not running any interference for the diplomacy being conducted right around them. Like, right in front of their face, Hamas is meeting with Egypt and Qatar to negotiate a peace deal, and you're invited. And you don't do anything about that? You just don't see them? I mean, my goodness. What is Israel doing to defend itself? Why is it that the United States is bailing them out, the UN, time and time again, vote after vote, to prevent a ceasefire? Where is the Israeli interference? I could have sworn that Mossad was the most vaunted intelligence agency ever. Where are they? Where are they? Why is Israel content with their new national image of being a genocidal nation? I don't get it. Like, you think that in fighting a war like this, where there's so much international pressure on you, you'd at least be reaching out to somebody to take the heat off of you, or even though they have the United States on side for now, what are they doing to cover themselves diplomatically? They're not doing anything. They're just exposed. And everything that happens is able to hit directly because of how exposed they are. But peace talks, the negotiations going, Hamas accepts, Israel refuses. Every time they do that, they look more unreasonable. Freedom-loving democracy, folks. Freedom-loving democracy, who's banning their opposition, refusing peace deals, so they can continue the slaughter of women and children. Because that's what it is. 70% of the deaths are women and children. So we can't even sit here and pretend like it's Hamas. 4,000 Hamas, according to the Euromed Human Rights Watch, 4,000 Hamas got. Right? 4,000 Hamas out of 42,000 total deaths, which means 38,000 civilians, 70% women and children. The slaughtering women and refusing to make peace for the sake of slaughtering women and children. That is Israel's legacy. And this won't be forgotten. This will not be forgotten. And if they don't make peace on their terms, they'll have to deal with the peace on someone else's terms. I'll say it now. I'll probably have to say it multiple times again. But that's how this is going to go down.